We're into the final month of the season. Can't quite believe that it is now November time, and all that goes with that in tennis obviously gets very exciting. And it has been incredibly exciting, Bazza, for Ash Barty, who not only had secured the number one ranking for the end of the year, but then goes to Shenzhen as the top player and comes up with the title. What a conclusion, although not quite, to an amazing season. Certainly on the tour, it has been a fabulous year for her.
Yeah, hi, Barry, from Milan. Got the flight today, so very much looking forward to the Next Gen Finals, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later on in our podcast. But yes, it's been a remarkable year. And we talked last week, Barry, and how nice it is that someone who's won a major, who's been able to end the year as the champion of the WTA Finals with what was on offer. I mean, incredible, the biggest winner's check ever in tennis. So, yeah, I think everything is hunky-dory for Barty. And what it's shown is how she can handle the pressure. And I think that was the key, because when you are seeded one and you are world number one, that hasn't necessarily translated to winning titles in the women's game, has it, in the last, decade or so, apart from Serena Williams. So was top seed, she handled the pressure. And there were a lot of interesting stories, of course, affected by some of the withdrawals, some of the injuries, but she was the player who was freshest in the end.
Yes, if we look first at sort of those who came and fell by the wayside, it was obviously a tough week for the tour. In fact, to have the likes of Osaka with a right shoulder injury, then Andreescu with a left knee problem, Kiki Bertens, who comes in as an alternate, beats Barty, but then pulls up when playing Bencic because of a viral illness, and then Bencic herself in the semis suffers with cramp. I mean, you couldn't have, you know, written worse scenarios in a way for them. But ultimately, the final itself was memorable. It was such high quality, particularly from Barty. Obviously, Svitolina as defending champion. So to have those two going up against each other, and the fact that Svitolina had won all five of their previous meetings. So it was a huge hurdle for Barty in more ways than one to get over. And she played superbly, Baz. I really thought how impressed I was with her, as you said, dealing with the pressure, dealing with the expectation. But the game style that she uses, it was just such a delight at times to see her constructing points, coming forward, using the slice so well to pin back Svitolina, and then opening up with her own forehand. And I mean, she struck some great winners around the court and finished off again at the net so smartly, so adeptly with the skill she has there.
Well, there aren't too many women that play like Ash Barty, and that's why she's always going to make life difficult for a lot of her opponents if she can bring them into areas of the court that are not that comfortable. Just going back to the injuries, and it's something that I feel really strong on, and I know you do, Barry, and we've talked about it for many years, but I can understand why the tournament did it, but I feel at the end of the season, it's got to be a quicker court. The players don't want a slow court, and we benefited last week in Paris with the final Masters, and I think that's maybe something that they can look at, that maybe that was a contributing factor to some of the amount of injuries that we had after a long season, to expect the players to go for long, grueling rallies. Now, there will be other people say, but hang on, it's got to be fair. My view is, at the end of the year, clay courts have had their period with the clay court events. You've had the slower hard court tournaments. I think the indoor season should be a surface where it suits all styles. It rewards players for being aggressive, but it also rewards players for being very good defenders. And I think he was just on the touch of the slow side. But Barty was the one where the cream was able to rise to the top, and tough for Svitolina, really, Barry, because she didn't win a title the whole year. Maybe that's what really counted right at the end, was the memories for Barty being able to come through the tough matches, and maybe for Svitolina, obviously the compensation of a great paycheck, but no titles at the end.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair point about the surface, and definitely they could have done with something a bit quicker. But in terms of Barty and the game style, as you said, she's one of the few who plays like that, but Do you believe that it could still inspire more players to play like that going forward?
I hope so. I think that she benefits, or has benefited, from playing a lot of doubles, because we shouldn't forget that initially she was a much better doubles player than she was singles player. I mean, she retired initially, didn't she, to focus on cricket, move away from the sport, but she'd already had a lot of success in the doubles game. And what we want is all-round skills. And I'm a big believer that we want all-round players. And the best chance of having all-round players is to stop the juniors just practicing for 2 hours and spending 1 hour and 55 minutes from playing from the back of the court and a token 5 minutes with serving and volleys. Develop your skills, play doubles as much as you can as juniors. And certainly early on in the professional, when you go as a pro, play as much doubles as you can. And I don't feel players who are 20 or 30 or 40 in the world should only exclusively be playing singles.
In terms of the doubles in Shenzhen, Babos and Mladenovic came up with the title there. Mladenovic is going to be part of the Fed Cup team for France in Perth, but also for the Australians. Not only have they got Barty, but they got Stoza, who made the semis there as well. So I think Alicia Molik is very sort of pumped about the possibilities for an Australian team to win that event over the next weekend, Bazza, which is something they haven't done since the early 1970s. I think 1974, the last time they achieved that. So that would be a terrific sort of conclusion on top of what the women have done on the tour for Australia this year, particularly with Ash Barty.
Can it get much better than for Barty? Well, maybe it can.
I don't think it can. Well, yeah, she'll go on and win the Australian Open at the beginning of next season. But yeah, it's just such a refreshing thing. I mean, she's so down to earth. She's very mature. She seems to learn fast. And I just think at the end of this year that to now have produced somebody of that stature, that sort of durability, after all the perhaps the failures of players, you know, you could have seen perhaps another number one come through and then not win the title. I think, was it Serena was the last number one to go on and win the end of season title back in 2014. So it's been a while since that happened, but Barty is very much a huge part of the future now, the women's sport, isn't she?
She is. And, you know, it has been a great year in the women's game with the story about Osaka, the story about Andreescu. I think it's in very safe hands. And then, you know, as soon as the year finishes, which it has, obviously, on the main tour, then, of course, all of us now are wondering who could step up next year, who could rival those three big names, and we shouldn't forget Halep, because that was maybe actually for me one of the stories as well, along with what Andreescu, Osaka and Barty did with the way she played at Wimbledon. And then Serena Williams, the factor about Serena, I was disappointed. I can understand it, but I was disappointed that she didn't play another tournament after the US Open, and time will tell whether that's a mistake at the start of next year, because you can only but see the younger players, the players that I've mentioned in terms of Osaka, Andreescu and Barty, you can only just see them improving.
Just one other player I'd like to mention and get your thoughts on the one who, to me, is still a bit of a conundrum. She's so talented. She can just play sort of effortless tennis and do it so well with that serve and the forehand she has, is Karolina Pliskova. And yet again, she still hasn't got her hands on a really huge title, has she?
No. And were you listening to when we were talking about Pliskova at Wimbledon and I said she was going to be my favourite for every Grand Slam until she wins one?
Yes.
Well, you wouldn't be surprised. I've actually changed my opinion.
Okay. Do you think she will then?
No, I don't. I don't think she will now. Because I didn't have her as a favourite for the US Open. No, I think that ultimately, she's going to be one of those players, and we have them in our sport and we have them in other sports. Golfers, there are a lot of golfers that spring to mind that have never just been able to get over that finishing line. And I think Pliskova, unfortunately for me, is going to be one of those. It's always going to be a little bit short, very talented on her day. But you need more than just being able to be very talented and be on your day in a Grand Slam, because it's over 2 weeks.
Obviously, Conchita Martinez has been working with her and trying to find that kind of missing link to find that final piece of the jigsaw. In terms of looking at what they have done together and where Pliskova was before that, what improvements do you think she has made, but what do you think she still is missing?
To be the very best and to win majors, it's mastering the art of winning when you're playing 7 out of 10. And I don't think Pliskova can win matches consistently at 7 out of 10. I think when everything is going her way, then at 9, and she can play now at 9 out of 10, then she can almost be unstoppable. But to me, that doesn't happen in a major. There's always one or two matches where it's a little squeaky, a little difficult at times. Maybe you've got to deal with the heat. Maybe you've got to deal with the win. Maybe you've got to deal with an opponent that is inspired. And I think at 27 years of age, it just seems to me, I might be totally wrong, but it just seems to me that she's missed that opportunity. When I look at the players now who are younger, who are only going to get better.
Yeah. Well, somebody who clearly can string matches together and come up with titles is Novak Djokovic. And what a week again for him. Was it a fifth title in Paris, a 77th career title, a 34th in the Masters? Amazing week for him. Just what he wanted, obviously, trying to get that number one ranking at the end of the year, because as the rankings have come out as we speak, you know, he's lost that to Nadal momentarily, and there's a bit of a gap to bridge. But the fact that Rafa went out with an ab injury at the semi-final stage, didn't face Shapovalov, and Djokovic has come through, you've got to hand it to him. I mean, when he sets his mind to things, he invariably comes up with the wins, doesn't he? And I thought played brilliantly to dismiss the Canadian challenge in the final.
He was awesome. Djokovic struggled in his opening match, but it sounded like he hadn't picked up a racket for about 4 months. Sounded like he hadn't done any training. I mean, he really was struggling. I heard him in his interview straight after his first couple of matches. He really was struggling. But the turning point was the second set against Carl Edmund in his second match. Actually, the last game to break, it was unbelievable. It was four winners. And really, from that moment on, Djokovic was the star man of the draw. He played amazing tennis. He easily dispatched Tsitsipas. I think the court favoured Djokovic more than it did for Tsitsipas, and it was very similar to what we had in Basel the week before. And Federer was able to expose errors of Tsitsipas's game that need to improve. I think we discussed it last week on our podcast, the return of serve. Djokovic was absolutely clinical, as he was in the final, but a great story for Shapovalov. He's come of age. He's improved so much in the last couple of months, and just his attacking tennis and the way he was able to take the attack to Zverev when he beat the German, where the German was kind of back to the passive German, which wasn't the case, of course, when he did so well in Shanghai when he beat Federer.
No, Zverev had started very well this past week against Verdasco, because he dropped, just four games against the Spaniard. But then watching closely that match against Shapovalov, which was on the second court, so it wasn't even in the main arena, but it had to be one of the matches of the week. Zverev was sort of too far behind early, and Shapovalov played a blistering for opening set. But the fact that it went the distance did show great fight from Zverev, albeit Shapovalov again showing stuff to, because he had not beaten Zverev before. So to come through and win that was another big thing for him, having recently got that first title in Stockholm. So, yeah, a tremendous week from his point of view. Mentioning Zverev, obviously he knew by the time he faced Shapovalov that he'd secured his place at the O2, so he will be back to defend that title, which is great considering the kind of rough ride he's had this year. And my man Berrettini, Bazza, he's in.
He made it.
And he did, by the skin of his teeth.
Was never in doubt. He would have bought Shapovalov a beer.
Yeah, I think he might have done. He obviously lost out to Songa, but he'd done enough the previous week. What was it, the semis in Vienna?
Yes,
that he made. So that, you know, got him through. And I think, I mean, when you look at the new guys who are going to be playing at the O2 with the old hands who have been sort of serial appearers, as it were, there. Obviously, you've got Nadal, Djokovic, Federer, Thiem, and Zverev, who have all played there before. But now we've got Medvedev and Tsitsipas and Berrettini. I think that's a great sort of selection in terms of the younger ones coming through. Although, from a global point of view, you know, that's all European, that field. You know, that's a shame in a way that it isn't more global.
Yeah, but in reality, it's the way it's going to be, isn't it? Until Demonor steps up, which he's getting close. He had a great end of the year. Obviously, it was really unfortunate with Del Potro that the injury affected Delpo, as it affected Nishikori, and the Americans aren't ready yet. The younger Americans aren't ready. They have made big strides in Riley Opelka and Fritz and TFO. But you know, none of those are ready for the top eight. So it's going to be very European dominated. And you going back to Berrettini, you know, he benefited from Shapovalov beating Monfils. Monfils had a chance to be able to make the last eight in, at the last minute. But he put in a sort of a flat performance. And I don't think he's really recovered, Gael, since the US Open. And it was, of course, that epic match against Berrettini. And I think the way Berrettini has played, not just at Flushing Meadows, but consistently this year, reaching numerous semi-finals on all surfaces, I think he absolutely deserves, in the end, to be the eighth man.
It'll be very interesting, won't it, to see how the groups sort of are drawn, who's playing who in the round robin. So much to look forward to there. But you are right now in Milan, as you say, you arrived today ahead of the next-gen finals. So although Tsitsipas was top of the list, he could still be playing there, but he's moved on to even bigger and better things. But in terms of who you do have there, well, Alex de Minaur is the leading guy, but no Felix Auger-Aliassime because of injury, and no Shapovalov because he announced earlier in the week in Paris that, you know, fatigue, it would mean he would not be able to do it. And yet he went and played as he did all the way to the final in Paris. That has to be a disappointment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it was sort of strange timing because I think it was after his quarterfinal win. And I think he had doubles later on that evening and he pulled out straight away. Listen, as disappointing as it is that he pulled out, I can kind of understand where he's coming from, Shapovalov. He's 15 in the world. He's established himself right at the top end of the men's game. But I look at the last two winners and I think what it has done for Chung, where he made the semifinals of the Australian Open a couple of months later, what it did for Tsitsipas, where, to be honest, he was a very similar position 12 months ago, Stefanos, and the pressure was on him. He was the one expected to win. And we could see during that week last year in Milan, Barry, how much it meant to him. He had that the altercation with the headsets, didn't he?
He did.
He didn't take too kindly to the way the match was going, but he won the event under real pressure and then went on a couple of months later. And I'm kind of, that's what I wanted us to see from Shapovalov, because it's all well and good to be able to play your best tennis when you've got no pressure, when people expect Zverev to win, when people expect Monfils to win because it's in Paris, when people expect Djokovic to win. But while we talk about Djokovic and Nadal and Federer, I mean, these guys for the last 10, 15 years have been favourites 99% of the time. And that is the biggest test. And that's what I kind of feel a little disappointed with Shapovalov not playing. I would have liked to have seen him play in the final against de Minaur and then put, you know, all on the line, see who can handle the occasion better.
Yeah. Well, he's not there, but obviously you do have A2R. Just tell us a bit more, Barry, about the field that we've got this time in Milan and who you think, aside from de Minaur, is going to be, you know, up there challenging come the weekend.
Yeah, so de Minaur, by far and away, the highest player in terms of ranking. He's 18. The next highest is Tiafoe. So Tiafoe's in Group B with Humbert, who the Frenchman, left-hander, who's played well at Wimbledon. Mikael Emer, the Swede. Great to see a Swede back in the top 100. And Jannik Sinner. And what a remarkable impression that he has made on the tour this year. And he's now in the top 100. Nice that Italian has qualified by right. That's the first time that's happened in the third year of the event. So those four names in Group B. And in Group A, along with de Minaur, Casper Ruud, Miomir Kecmanovic, who has been on empty in the last couple of months. Let's hope that he's got one last big week in him, the Serb, because I think he's going to be a star for the future. And the nightmare for radio commentary. Davidovich Fokina.
Alejandro Davidovich Fokina, so, from Spain.
Yeah, have you been working on that, Barry, or are you just going to say the Spaniard?
I think the Spaniard, or ADF.
Yes.
ADF, maybe easier.
ADF versus RBA when they play next year.
That's it, yeah. Yeah. Nicknames always help. I'm shortening them. But yeah, I mean, the odds on still de Minaur and Tiafoe is the standouts there.
Yeah, I think Sinner will play well. And it wouldn't surprise me if Humbert has a very good week. I think with it being with him being a lefty. And I was on site this afternoon, and a really impressive arena, the Allianz Cloud Arena in Milan. It's been renovated, but actually, amazingly, it was where Roger won his first title back in 2001. So it's a special place for Federer, and it's quick court. It's a quick court like it was last week in Paris. So, you know, there's a chance for anyone who's aggressive, who executes, to be able to lift the title. So Tiafoe definitely would be a player in there. I think Di Minor is the standout player in Group A. I'd be absolutely shocked if he doesn't win Group A. I think Group B could be Tiafoe, Humbert or Jannik Sinner. Any one of those three could win or come second.
Well, part of the next gen is also about new rules, new technology being employed, the way the whole thing is officiated, but also this year, wearable technology in competition. Tell us more about that.
Yes, so the players have the option to wear sort of the tracking device, which the rugby players, you'll see at the back of their shirts, they've got the sort of device. Yep. which tracks the mileage, tracks their heart rate. But the players have the choice of using it. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see the data. Because the players are wearing it, they own the data. So if they want to release it, they can do. But I think certainly a great tool for the players, great tool for the coaches, and also a great tool for the trainers, because they can be able to see how's that heart rate, Barry, when you're down break point. How's that heart rate when you've had a 30 or 40 shot rally? So I think that, you know, technology becomes such a huge part in our sport. And I go back, you know, Djokovic. He has someone, Craig O'Shaughnessy, who hopefully is in Milan. I'd like to have a chat with him. And, you know, very much a part of the Djokovic team in terms of the compiling all the data, tracking players' strengths and weaknesses, what their plays on the big points. Federer's definitely bought into it now. 10, 15 years ago, Federer used to go on court, almost say, I'm Roger Federer, I'm better than you. Now, he's smart. You know, there's a lot more a clearer way he wants to be able to expose players' weaknesses. You know, going back to Djokovic yesterday against Shapovalov. Shapovalov, one of the features of his tennis in Paris, he chipped a lot more returns, putting a lot more returns in play. What does Djokovic do? First game, serves and volleys. You know, it's little
it was amazing,
things like that.
Isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that absolutely stood out because Mikhail Yuzhny working with Shapovalov, and that's something he's brought in, hasn't it? That sort of chipping back the returns more, and the success that Shapovalov has had against others, but others don't include the world number one coming into the event, Novak Djokovic, the top seed. And as you say, straight away, he was onto that, that they'd worked out that, okay, that was a way to handle what Shapovalov was trying to do. And it showed, but also amazingly, just his own serve, Baza, was sensational after that awkward opening against Moutet in his first match. But from then on, he faced just one break point in his last four matches. That was in the final, and Shapovalov didn't convert on that. So to me, you know, Djokovic goes, although he'll go as number two in the world back to the O2, he'll be the favourite, won't he, for you?
Has to be, especially with the doubts about Nadal. I read earlier on today, when my flight left early, Heathrow, that he was going to have a scan. Do we know any updates as things stand?
I haven't seen anything yet, but obviously that could be a developing story this over the next few days. That would be such a shame if he were to miss out again. But I don't know. It's a strange one, isn't it? Obviously, he had the success that he did a little earlier in the campaign on the hard courts again, which is great to see. But it was a real blow for Paris, despite such a strong field, that ultimately, you know, we didn't get him going further, perhaps, although Shapovalov obviously earned the right to play where he did.
Yeah, it was very tough for everyone concerned. I mean, the crowd who would have been pumped for Nadal in the semi-final, and they would have been hoping that it would have been Nadal Djokovic. But I think for Rafa, that if that had been the end of the year and that had been a Grand Slam, he would have absolutely played. But he's got London coming up, where, I mean, the 360 points that he got from making the semi-finals is a nice little cushion. So it's still in his hands, going to London for the battle for number one. And Davis Cup, I think that's big for Rafa. It's in Madrid. I was sort of posing the question last week, and I really don't know the answer. But if you said to Rafa now, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a fifth year-end number one ranking? Would you rather have Paris Indoor champion? Would you rather have the O2 champion? Or would you rather have a Davis Cup win, the inaugural Davis Cup, obviously in this new form format that it is in Madrid? I don't know. I
know what you're saying. I wonder, for all his patriotism, clearly, and he does want to do a great job at the very end of the year in Madrid in the Davis Cup finals. But he has not won the season-ending championships, you know, the Masters as was, the Nitto ATP finals as they now are at the O2. That is one title that's eluded him. And bearing in mind how much, you know, success Federer and Djokovic have had there, and yet he's won everything else going, that would be, for me, an absolutely outstanding, you know, end to what has been a tremendous year again for him.
Yeah, I think that probably makes the most sense, doesn't it? Because it's still not right on his CV. Rafael Nadal only won indoor hardcourt title. That was Madrid many years ago. So I think you're probably right. I think that would probably be his choice. And of course, with the stomach muscle injury, and I had it as a junior, if you do really pull your stomach muscle, there's no way you fit in 2 weeks. That's not going to happen. So I think it was a little strain. I don't think it's too serious. And I think that's why he made the sensible decision to pull out. And I guess the next 2 or 3 days, hopefully he can get the required amount of rest and treatment that he can go to London and put on a good show. Again, what we don't want to see from Nadal with the year he's had is for him to play one match and pull out.
No, I mean, when we saw, you know, what a shame it was in Shenzhen for the women that so many did through the week, although the ultimate match was a great one between Barty and Svitolina. Baz, thanks very much for all that. Have a great week in Milan. Don't eat too much of the pasta and the ice cream, but knowing you, you probably will have a go at it. And we'll chat again on Saturday after the final. How about that?
I've had my pasta, but I would not have an ice cream, Barry. My body is too conditioned for ice cream.
Yeah, your body a temple. Okay, Baza, thanks very much, mate. And we'll speak in a few days' time.
Take care.
Bye for now. And thanks, everybody, for listening.